The following episode is brought to you by the generous donations of Laura Pickren, Daryl Delaney, Darren Katzka, Devious Pop-Tart, Irene Villarito, Ryan Royce, Andy Dossett, Danielle Bramhall-Smith, Elizabeth Clark, Eric Whitman, Jessica Smith, Charles Compton, Natasha Rallerson, Richard Cree, The Cam Family, David Scrams, Dustin Troop, Edvarth Arnoff, Michael Clark, Rebecca Gauman, and Shelby Johnson, as well as all of our generous patrons.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role. www.d20radio.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Eberron Renewed, an actual play RPG podcast set in the Eberron campaign setting using the Genesis game system. Oh, gotta streamline that. My name's Jeff.
I'm Philip.
I'm Trevor.
I'm Randy.
I'm Eric.
And I pulled the greatest swindle in the world and stole from Eric the opportunity to say, here we are around the table in person for the first time ever. For the five of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
First time recording anything on this feed in over a year.
Yeah. Last January.
January 2020.
There you go.
Wow.
It's good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Right?
We had lunch and everything.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is not Eberron Renewed. This is Eberron Reviewed, yes. where we answer questions about the last arc. There weren't a ton, but there was a lot that went on. I think we definitely have some discussions that we can have. Mm-hmm. So let us
discuss.
Yeah. Begin at the beginning. Philip, take it away.
Oh, I mean,
you had the multi-hour commute here.
Yeah, so. You're the one who listened to it.
I watched the last few episodes.
It was just since the last review, right?
Okay, yeah. I mean, mostly we went into the facility and we fought a crazy large lizard that was way larger than we thought initially.
Any of us suspected.
Like, we initially thought we were dealing with something like the size of a troll, but actually we were dealing with something the size of a Tyrannosaurus.
Yes.
And that realization was big.
Tomato, potato. Yeah.
We were thinking Velociraptor and we walked in on Gojira.
Yeah. And
I blame Reynard for not accurately representing.
Yeah, I assume that's what it was. Reynard didn't accurately describe the size of the thing when he came back up, so that's probably
don't
what it was.
Don't know where he got his information from. But
all I was told was it was big.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a lot of fighting. It didn't go great.
Well, for some, there was a lot of fighting.
It didn't go great.
There was a lot of falling for some.
Yeah. But ultimately, most of us got out. Reynard got the hostages out through the sewers. Eris sealed the door behind us. We lost Faru. And then we had a long talk about all that on the patio of the Four Sails.
Right. You know, if we've done a two-episode fight, which I'm not saying we haven't. I can't think of one. But not if we
this
have,
campaign.
It might definitely have wasn't against a single antagonist.
Right.
That was wild. So let's talk. Eric, did you intend for us to fight this?
Yeah, so that's
just start right there. Because, we all misinterpreted its size. Just flat out. I thought it was, I mean, even to the point that, like, I couldn't even do my headbutt thing to it at any point.
And I want to go into this answer / discussion with the preface that at no point am I implying that anybody played incorrectly, I guess. Like, it just went against my expectations of what I thought was going to happen at the table. I had built out that encounter with the mindset of giving some members of the party things to do while others engaged in combat, if for no other reason to get enough time to get the hostages, the prisoners out. And so...
Oh, so that was the goal.
Well, that was part of it. Like, that was an available option. But, like, at the outset, if you go back and listen to the fight leading... Or the episode leading into the fight, Randy immediately says, I think Mila's going to go deal with that machine while you all deal with this. That was exactly what I thought was going to... Like, I thought, okay, I provided this arcane thing that Milo can go tinker with. And if he's needed, he can from a distance do stuff. But, you know... Milo can't stand up to this thing. And I know that. Milo can't stand up to anything. Like, no offense to Milo, but...
Milo didn't spend a lot of time standing up. It's true.
Milo's just not built for combat, which is fine. Or not built for taking hits in combat, I guess is a better way to
put it. He's not built for close-up.
Yeah.
Eris would have gone and figured out the machine, but she was offended by Milo saying he was going to be the one to go figure out the machine.
But I guess, like, that thing... Like, pulling the curtain back, because if you all ever encounter it again, it's going to be a different beast entirely, literally. But, I mean, that thing had 36 wounds. Like, and so, you all, your damage output, I've learned from your combat encounters, is incredibly high. So, you know, I didn't think that thing was going to take you all more than 3 rounds to take care of. Obviously, it hits like a freight train. Yeah. But, it's not... super difficult to hit outside of the adversary rating, which once again doesn't increase the difficulty, just increases the likelihood that something bad happens. So that, like, that in my brain is what I was anticipating happening. Granted, your plans only go so far until they come in contact with the players. So yeah.
We put a fair amount of damage on it.
Well, he also had pretty intense soak, I think.
Yeah.
He had wild soak, because at one point I think I did 12 and you were like, that's basically nothing. Like,
He had a soak of 8. Yep. So,
yeah.
But you know, like, and that's why I also gave you all Furu and Kath, because they're also combat focused NPCs. So, you know, it was a 7-on-1 fight in my brain. And so now, granted, like I said, it's a giant, literally giant lizard thing. So the response that you all gave was not at all inappropriate or, like, you know, It was just, yeah, it was an interesting encounter that did not go the way that I anticipated it going.
You know, the one thing about, not that there are many things about this system that make it interesting, but, well, just, okay, last campaign. In D&D, some things are guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Dex was never going to fail a perception check.
Yeah.
And he was almost certainly always going to go first in combat because of the guaranteed additions. What do you call those? Not...
Bonuses.
My plus 16 that I had to perception, I think. Hob, who is built to fight, could get misses on every single roll in a combat. It'd be unlikely, but possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I imagine it's got to be more difficult for you to appropriately plan what would we call a CR in D&D, because, only 36 wounds, which isn't a lot, and we deal a lot. But the dice still have to be there.
Yeah. And because in damage, I think more so is a variable in Genesis compared to D&D. Because with D&D, you know, you're rolling the same dice for damage. And so there is a repeatable arc of damage that you can hit.
The, what's it called? The ribbon weave is guaranteed a minimum of 9 damage on every hit. Because I got a plus 8.
Yeah. Whereas, for your all's weapons, you do have that base damage. The longbow is 7 damage plus however many successes you get. But there's just a lot more of a wider swing, I feel like, in Genesis in terms of the damage output. Because, this thing has a soak of 8, but I have seen Eris, Hob, and Reynard, and Milo with his wand, consistently output 15, 16 damage on a hit. Because you all roll 7 successes, and it's like, well... this rival level enemy is now paced on the wall. There's less of a ceiling, I guess, in Genesis than there is in D&D.
Because pretty much your damage output in D&D is gonna, that's it, unless of course it has resistance, or something to that effect.
Yeah, because I mean, granted, Milo's not the best case, because this thing, its base damage is 10. So it looks at Milo. If it lands a hit, Milo's down. Like, there's no amount of success that it could roll to not take out Milo.
Right.
But, you know, this thing might only put out 11 damage before soak, in which case, in Hob's case, isn't nearly as bad as when it it rolled 5 successes and dealt 15 damage. So,
So this actually rolls pretty well into a question, given that we've already discussed that we misunderstood the size and that you've defended why this was an appropriate antagonist. Richard Cree asks, given the misunderstanding at the table of the size of the foe they were facing, as a GM, would you have allowed them to rewind their actions? Is it something you would ever do in a campaign, or pardon me, in a game, if it became clear that the player's perceptions were way off from what you were envisioning? I know Jeff, that's me, hi, stated that he would not have taken the action he took if he had fully understood what they were up against. I wonder if Trevor, if he had understood how big the lizard had gotten, would he have had Reynard make different choices, like going back upstairs and saying, "Yeah, never mind, it's very big, we should leave," instead of trying to shoot it with an arrow. So let's start with Trevor, just because that's a pretty quick yes or no. If do you feel that you had an accurate idea of how big the
No, I definitely misunderstood what giant meant.
Yeah, but also, you did say that it had gotten considerably larger in the intervening time, so it may not have been.
It was growing from the first time Reynard saw it to when he went back down.
And we did spend a stupid amount of time talking before we moved.
We did.
So it probably went from like elephant size, really, when I saw it. Or Reynard saw it.
I mean, it was the size of like a troll when you saw it, and then when you came back down there, it had
The last time that he saw it before we went back downstairs, it was a size that we would have thought was manageable.
Yeah, I mean, to borrow an easy reference, the lizard in Amazing Spider-Man, like for those who have seen that, where it's still humanoid and like a solid few feet taller than a large human, but not a storm giant kind of size.
Yeah, we're talking Lou Ferrigno Hulk, and then it turned into
Mark Ruffalo Hulk.
Sure, yeah, exactly. I cannot think of the intervening Eric Bana Hulk.
Oh yeah,
that was like grabbing helicopters in between its thumb and forefinger.
Yeah.
Okay, so Eric, let's go to you. If I think there's two ways to attack this. One, would you ever allow it? And two, in this situation, if we'd be like, come on, man, we had no idea. Because considering the fact that our information, our intel was bad because we waited so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular instance, like to directly answer Richard's question about this episode, no. Because, A, your all's response was not, if you all had like, in earnest, gone, okay, listen, like, there is no way in hell I would have done this action if I had known the true size of this thing. Mm-hmm. And it was clearly like an upsetting thing. Then sure. Yeah. We'll talk about it and walk back whatever actions we need to. But I think the circumstances surrounding, I think the misunderstanding of the size, as you all have already alluded to, played into the reality of the situation. Like Reynard saw a thing, came up and reported it, but that thing was constantly changing while you all were talking.
Yeah.
And so the misunderstanding of the situation actually plays into the reality of what you all were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Hob jumped down there without fully looking. And so, I mean, obviously, I think the biggest thing that I didn't do a good job of describing was the dimensions of the room, because I think that betrayed the possible size of this thing, because I didn't describe that it had immensely large ceilings that could accommodate something that size. And so I think that was the failing on my end. That Genesis is a fun system, but the silhouette system for describing the size of things is horribly detached from any kind of reality. And so, that's a learning thing for me as a GM at this particular table, is that's not a good way to convey to you all that information. And so, To bluntly answer Richard's question, no. In this instance, I would not have walked it back because, especially by the time it became an issue, we were like properly into, I think, the next round before it fully sunk in size.
He had already been attacked for sure.
Yeah. Right, well, because it had been after Reynard attacked, after you had attacked, after Milo had gotten knocked down. And so,
oh, was it that deep in?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so we would have had to walk back quite a ways in that instance. So. Honestly, if we had, you all would never have known as listeners, because we would have just hit the stop button and re-recorded that section.
Right.
So,
and I gotta say,
part of the movie magic that we do over here at Eberron Renewed,
as a player, I'm trying to think about what it would take for me to petition to walk something that important back that far.
Yeah.
Like, because part of the fun of the game is dealing with the dumb things
you don't know what's happening. Yeah.
Now I will say also part of the not fun of the game is having to deal with some of the dumb things that you did earnestly mistaken.
Yeah.
Like, I made a bad strategy call is one thing. I misheard you. I didn't hear you say Dracula is another thing, you know?
I said the floor was lava. I thought you said the floor was fava beans.
Yeah. I thought I was going to see Dr. Acker. stupid joke.
But yeah, I mean, and to fully answer your question, Richard, it's dependent on the situation. Mm. Like, there are instances where I would be totally amenable to walking things back and other situations where I wouldn't. And I think that the line for me is if it's something that puts the players feel like they're at a strategic disadvantage within the fight because they misunderstood something, I'm not going to walk that back because, you know, people make strategic miscalls all the time in reality. If it's something that's detracting from the enjoyment of the game at the table and people are feeling genuinely frustrated, then yeah, we would have that conversation about what needed to be done to rectify that frustration. So,
yeah. Little things we walk back all the time. I don't know how many times we're like, oh no, wait, I'm sorry. I don't say that. I thought that was this person.
Yeah.
I would never say that to this person. I thought it was this person.
Yeah.
And sometimes those would be consequential.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure I said things in the first campaign to Orgev or Borinel, and then somebody was like, he's the king. Oh,
that's a king, right?
Right. My king? Okay.
Yeah, specifically, your sovereign.
Right.
So.
Awesome. So, okay. And again, I hate to go back to campaign one, but this is the first thing that we've done that felt more like, because just a big group of people fighting one thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say of the people that came through campaign one, we never lost someone this early.
Yeah.
Like,
well, there was Aiko.
Aiko Mills, come on. But God.
He doesn't count.
Aiko doesn't count. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, beloved.
There was no emotional.
Anyway.
Because we joked from the jump that Aiko was clearly cannon fodder.
Yeah. So.
Nice red shirt he had on there.
I don't know. That felt way more intense than any other time we lost a short-term ally.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously part of it is the fact that Kat's been here from day one and it's her brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Estranged or not.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know. That one
I mean, from Eris's perspective, comparing it to Beric, the idea of someone dying to get others out, perfectly comprehensible to Eric, to Beric.
He gave it a shot.
Beric, well, yeah. Especially when they cooperate and leave. But perfectly comprehensible to Beric, even early in the campaign, like even before Beric got where he was. Military family, mom.
Well, his faith. I mean, it's centered around faith, somebody.
Yeah, the very basis of the Silver Flame. Like, so all that made a great deal of sense to Beric. And so, you know, honor that move forward. I think this really messed up Eris because, quite apart from, you know, I realize it's normal to have not had the experience of somebody died to save you, like in a fight. Like, that's normal to have not had that experience. But I think for Eris, it's someone sacrificing significantly, someone putting themselves in mortal harm's way. Like, just even those things are not in her experience. She doesn't know what to do with that, with the emotional baggage that comes with that.
Yeah, I think Hob understands it to the point that he believes that he would be willing to do that himself, but it's still not comfortable with the fact that it had, like, Hob's reeling from, also partially because even though Reynard fired that arrow, there was still a opportunity to retreat.
Yeah.
There wasn't once Hob jumped off the top turnbuckle. And at that point, so he feels very responsible for reaching that point of no return that got Faru killed. Mm-hmm. I think I made that clear in the downtime episode.
I mean, Reynard just kind of heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't there for the gut wrenching decision to close the door.
Yeah.
Hold the door. Sorry. But I mean, I think you can assume from the downtime it was somewhat effective to being like, man, we done goofed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was on us.
I think Milo found it incredibly relatable. Not that they died the same way, but, you know, with his wife being gone, mm-hmm. and Milo's instant thought is, you know, can we save him?
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do? And I don't want Kath to have to deal with this. Is there any way to help that situation?
Went straight to bargaining. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving forward with questions from the Discord. Irene would like to know, Eric, why do you like to break my heart?
It's been over 200 episodes, Irene. It gives me fuel. No. No, honestly, and that's something I wanted to touch on. Like, the Farood, that was 100% organic. Like, that was not an intended set piece moment. I didn't go into that fight thinking, okay, so I need to manufacture things to where...
Right.
Because it was a critical injury that Farood suffered that said he has to go last. And that's what kind of set things up to happen the way they did, is Farood had to go last that turn. And once he exceeded his wound threshold, it was like, okay, what would Farood do? Because once again, pulling the curtain back, I had envisioned Farood having more legs in this campaign. And so I got a lot of info on him. And so I knew exactly what Farood would do in that situation. It was like, well, he's not going to, in no realm of reality would he accept somebody putting themselves in danger on his account. So go. And yeah, so that was just as heartbreaking for me as it was for all of you, because I really like Farood. I thought he was a fun character. And
I mentioned this, I think, when we played. It might have been when we got together for the downtime episode. Farood felt like a passing character.
Mm-hmm.
He was only in one fewer episode than Draconos was in campaign one.
Yeah.
So, like, he actually was way more substantial than I realized right up until he died. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I gave us a chance to try to get him back, because I knew Eric had all these plans and had him built out.
Yeah. If you all could have seen the video call when we were doing that, as soon as Randy started talking about that, I was going, like, nodding my head emphatically and like, yes, that sounds great.
I was for it. Hey, there's a question. No one asked it, but here it is. Reynard, why did you decide not to go and try to get Farood out?
Honestly, I think in Reynard's mind, it would have been more of like, I didn't get to see what happened. I'm not going to throw myself in a situation where I didn't see what happened.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So...
I feel like Reynard's answer was entirely, like, logical of...
Yes.
It's been 5 minutes in a room with an insane, mad dinosaur creature. Yeah. Why do we assume he's in one piece?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer as well. I just wanted to...
Yeah. I just think in Reynard's mind, it was like, you know, the amount of loss we could suffer is not going to amount to the loss we already... Or it's going to greatly surpass the loss we already suffered.
Totally.
So. Right. And that's discounting the fact that we don't have the same points of ingress and egress anymore because Eric barred the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you have to go back in through the sewer again. Yeah.
But 10,000% understand Milo.
Yeah.
Saying,
oh, sure.
We can, come on.
Yeah. There's a chance, so why don't we take it? Yeah.
Right. Which I think Hobbs said the same thing. He was like, I agree that sounds like a good idea, but... I'm not going, and I'm not going to make anybody else go. I guess you can peddle your wares elsewhere and see if you get a sale. And also, Irene would like for you to post pictures
of the table,
of the new table that we are all sitting around. And
yes.
I almost called her Ann. And Liz agrees. Okay. So there's a question that the other Eric asked before the downtime dropped, but I think we can talk about it a bit. Has Reynard earned his way back into the good graces of the crew? What are the crew's feelings about working with Aransas? I'll say for Hob, Reynard has never been in his good graces, nor in his doghouse. But after the way he acted in the last episode and in the conversation in the downtime, Hob is open to Reynard earning a spot in his good graces. Just because they've always been indifferent towards each other.
Yeah.
It feels like...
It's just like that coworker that is there.
Right.
Not necessarily friends.
You know, I neither like nor dislike Reynard. I'm happy. I'm willing to work with Reynard. I will not put up any pushback. But Milo and Aeris have connections with Hob that predate the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so... But yeah, having said that, Hob is on board with watching Reynard potentially grow into a worthwhile human being. Elf, pardon me.
Yeah, I think for Milo, he is considered Reynard, you know, like a friend. And going through seeing some of the decisions that Reynard has made, it's kind of like thrown Milo into this, like, okay, this guy's my friend. Why are we? I don't understand.
But why is he my friend?
Yeah. Well, and then kind of slowly discovering that Reynard is more complicated than Milo first suspected. There's more going on with Reynard than just the let's go drink.
Yeah.
So.
It's entirely unfair, but Aeris has an entirely unfair interpretation of what went down, because there was a group of strangers down there strapped to tables. They're not anything to Aeris, and everybody that is something to Aeris is in mortal danger up here. And Reynard went down there towards the people that he might get paid for rescuing. And obviously the conversation at the four sales went very differently from Eris's perspective. So, no, Reynard is not back in Eris's good graces. I recognize that as unfair, just for the record. But
I don't think it's unfair.
Does Aeris believe in altruism?
Within a very limited scope of her people, her kas, mm-hmm. her group that is the first person plural of her world. Yes, Aeris would do a lot for people who fit into that category without having to ask, without expecting anything in return. You know, if we had come down there and there was not a lizard monster, there would be no question. Let's get these people off the table and rescue them and get them out of here. This is horrible. Sure. And Aeris would have.
That's why I thought I had a perfect plan. I was like, Aeris is going to want to play with this technology. That is not
Aeris
hers.
Aeris would have loved to play with this technology, but Aeris was concerned that everyone upstairs was going to die while she played with this technology. And that was unacceptable to her. Yes, Aeris would have loved to be down there in circumstances where everyone she cares about is not in dire danger, to mess with the technology and get those people out, because everything that was happening down there was horrifying to her for a lot of reasons. But in this situation, the way it played out, those people are nothing to her. The people upstairs are everything to her, and she wants to get the people upstairs out because this thing is not something that we can handle in her world.
And she was correct. Yeah, in my head, I was just like, I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to ask each character what philosophical concept they may or may not believe in. What are Milo's thoughts on aesthetics? Okay. Oh, we do have more questions.
For me?
Yeah, I actually thought of something I was going to ask you, but I've lost it. But we do have a question from Al Dente on our Discord. Without disclosing anything you would prefer to have come out during play, could you talk a little bit about why Reynard was so focused on saving the shifters? You did it in character
mm-hmm.
on the downtime, but is there anything Trevor would add to why you made that decision to have Reynard.
So I think it goes back a little bit to the train fight that went so sour for Reynard's lovability. In Reynard's mind, the group of people he is with signed up knowing there was some aspect of danger. You know, not a giant lizard person that's going to tear us apart, but there's some aspect of danger. And at least in his mind in that moment, you know, these people laying on the table are innocent. And they've been put in this situation outside of their choice. So I think that's why Reynard felt a little more driven to save them instead of the people that... Because even himself, it's going to be dangerous for him to go over there and try and fix it. Especially because he knows nothing about technology.
I don't think there is a worse person here. Because at least if it explodes, Hobb can take that hit. Yeah,
like, right. He's just plugging and unplugging things like an old telephone operator.
So I think it just kind of went to like a little... I don't want to say battle mode, but kind of like, okay, those people... know that there is some kind of aspect of danger that we're walking into any situation, and these people didn't have a choice. So Reynard was going to go. I mean, I guess that makes him sound like a good person, even though he's doesn't always make those choices. But yeah. same idea for the train fight. I think I expressed like we knew there's an aspect of danger, and then we were in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
And if this is something you want to reveal during play, please don't just tell me. But why did you choose this time for Reynard to dabble with sobriety?
Oh, because of what's his name?
Faru?
Faru, because of Faru's death.
You just figured if I was sharper?
Well, just kind of a didn't think that was ever going to happen. Maybe I should not be drunk all the time. And sure. Have better thoughts about the way things are going to happen.
Well, and I think also it kind of speaks to Reynard's background of coming from one of the houses of going on jobs with teams and stuff of like that kind of, you know, if you sign up for a job, you're signing up to be there and, you know, whatever happens may happen. I think that's also an interesting aspect of Reynard's background. So anyway.
Sure. Okay. A few more questions we have here. Jerry wants to know if all the players... Jerry wants to know, can all the players sing the choir scale?
Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Capable. Yes. Will? No.
No.
I don't know what that is.
Do-re-mi.
Solfege, my man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Do, yep. A deer, a female.
We said no.
Okay. I mean, you can. You're more than welcome to.
He asked all
of us. Yeah, he asked, can all the players? The answer is yes, we all can. No, not all of us will.
Correct.
But apparently Trevor's interested. He wanted to give you...
Find me on my podcast.
yes, actually, several of us have been trained singers for a long time. But no, we're not going to do that. Jerry does ask, so... Philip or Eric or anyone who would know, you got it right on the first try. Is there an in-universe holiday coming up that we might see a session of now that the date has been established again?
I can answer the first part of that.
Yeah,
I can't answer the second.
Feel free to answer the upcoming holidays because, spoiler alert, I don't know the calendar as well as Philip.
So it's also going to depend to a degree on how much of the calendar you take as canon because... You know, if you're an obsessive, you know that Keith Baker doesn't really count all the books because some of the books were written without his input and don't really fit. And one of them is Faiths of Eberron, which is where you get most of the holidays.
Yeah.
So there are a whole bunch of Silver Flame holidays that don't really fit with the description of the Silver Flame. And there's one of those like two or three times a month. So there's probably some of those coming up. I think the next general holiday is the following month is Brightblade, which might actually be a fun session because Brightblade focuses on one of the sovereigns, Dol Dorne, who's the god of, or the sovereign, of martial combat and excellence. And it's celebrated with arena fights and feats of strength. And like it's a Hobb-centered, it's a Hobb-themed holiday. And that's coming up the next month. What the next month is Nim, which is
sounds like a good gambling holiday too.
I think it would probably be a very good gambling holiday. Yes, that's true. So that is
I heard it that way.
That is the next holiday is Brightblade, but as to whether there would be, we would see a session of that, that of course is not my call.
Yeah.
I will say we are recording this and the next, at least first part of the arc, depending on how long it goes, the next three episodes on International Workers' Day.
Oh.
So we can say that that is now officially whatever day we are on in Eberron.
Sounds like an Eberron holiday.
Is yep. Officially, it, to celebrate the anniversary of, oh crap, Samwise Gompers. I'm proud of me. Just me? Okay. See, Samuel Gompers was, you know, never mind.
Good old Uncle Sam.
No, not him. Not him.
I mean, he may have been an uncle.
The father of the AFL-CIO, Samuel Gompers. Sam Wise, you may know this part. Character from Lord of the Rings. The joke was good.
Yeah.
For having come up about 10 seconds after I needed a joke in my head. Anyway. Leopard would like to know, do you think that Genesis is running into conflict with what is a common D&D structure of the enemies continuing to get bigger and tougher? Genesis is supposed to be a low power level system, but are we getting away from Avengers versus thugs in the street and more into Defenders versus Doctor Doom, aka really punching outside of our weight class?
And I, like I said before, that last combat encounter was not out of your all's weight. Like that is a very much a winnable fight, numbers on paper kind of standpoint. And so, no, I don't think the system is running into conflict with the adventure structure that A, we're going for with this campaign, or B, I mean, Genesis has bigger and tougher adversaries that you can pull from.
Yeah, they got dragons.
Yeah, I mean, the monster card that I used for the reptile is a mid-tier at best in terms of toughness. So Genesis has plenty of legs to get higher and higher power. It just, the power manifests itself differently. You all are never going to be able to stop time like you could in D&D. But you could knock out a troll with one punch at one day hob. Like, I mean, that's
doable. I was looking at talents today. And one of them that I was going to take, I ended up taking ranks. We'll talk about that later, yeah. I guess. And didn't actually take any talents. But there's a talent in the tier that I can purchase. And I think it's called Berserker. It's something like that. Every successful melee attack, I just get to add a success and two advantage.
Yeah.
Which basically means I'm guaranteed a crit, and I'm guaranteed, potentially, I could do a crit and a flurry of blows and really mess up somebody's day.
Yeah.
So part of it is we need to be more judicious in our talent taking if we really want to be formidable in fights.
Yeah. Also, if everybody at this table would spend their experience as they get it, then it would also be a very different thing in terms of power.
Yeah, Trevor.
Me, as me.
No, that's... I did it this time. I had 55 experience to pull from because it didn't feel right to me to level up in the middle of a day, let alone an arc.
Yeah. I think I'm back up to 90 or something.
Yeah. Like
that's a lot.
Work on that.
Trevor. Like, I know 55 is huge.
No, I mean, but the reasoning to not.
To be fair, my arrow shots have been real effective.
Yeah, that's
I didn't
fair.
Don't feel the need to level
just,
it up.
Just the idea of Hobbs saying, oh, by the way, since this morning I've learned magic and can heal you now, just doesn't feel
right.
Authentic. What am I saying?
So, but to answer your question, Leopard, no, I don't think that Genesis is running into conflict with our campaign or the structure that we're going for. So. I think there's a lot of accentuating circumstances, as there would be in a D&D game. Eris being built in D&D is going to have the exact same reaction to seeing a giant lizard attacking her friends as she would in Genesis. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and we play, especially this campaign so far, we are not a combat-heavy game. I think we were initially, as especially myself, and to a lesser extent Trevor Rodman, we're getting our just learning how to play D&D out of the way. And it's easy to interpret roles and learn some, you know, fitting strategies for the game in combat.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I will never know what I'm doing. So it doesn't matter.
But then, I mean, we clearly moved farther and farther. I mean, we had whole arcs with no combat.
Yeah.
Have had before. So.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I love combat. I think combat is a blast. I think it stretches my improvisational muscles as well, more so than just chatting, because I talk all the time, but having to strategically plan a set of things to do.
Yeah.
Never been good at that.
It's fun to get the blood pumping, too. You know? It's like, oh, what is going to happen?
But man, I would much rather have Hob say something clever at an important time than bust the right head at the right time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Unfortunately, being at my mercy, he will never say the right thing at the right time. So. From Laura.
It's a very deep and serious question.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, we didn't get a lifestyle question this time like we
That's
did last
true.
Time.
Yeah, it's true.
They learned their lesson. Describe your dream house. We're like, we're all boring. I don't know, big enough, maybe a pool. All right. Win the loaded dice, accept their role as a superhero team, and have to epically battle the Sinister Six. How many of them will be wearing a bird mask with their costume? I believe zero?
Yeah.
Correct.
I don't know that I understand the question.
Yeah, yeah, Trevor wasn't here for that campaign. So campaign one reference for those of you that are lost.
Oh, all the villains had bird masks, right?
Yeah.
Many of the villains.
I heard had that. Bird masks. Yeah, I listened. I remember now. Is the question, would I wear a bird mask?
Yeah, that's what we're ending on.
You know what? You yes. at the table. Trevor more. At the table wearing there a bird
two
mask.
More in the Q&A.
Yeah, oh, sure, why not? As long as it's a peacock.
Too early.
Oh,
was
sure
there
enough,
ever a peacock?
Yes.
What? Was there a peacock?
There was not a peacock.
So. Wow, well, missed opportunity.
I know.
That's true. No one was a peacock. That would be a weird mask. Just so long.
Reynard had an owl mask at the ball.
I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
So Reynard would.
The peacock, though, is you have the... Just the small head and tiny beak, but
and then
the
feathers
back of the band.
Yeah.
You have the feathers. Yeah.
So your head is a whole peacock.
Could do that for a turkey also, I guess. Just have the
same thing, just different colors.
Different coloring.
I saw a thing on Reddit this morning of a little kitten that was just batting around a peacock that was parading, just batting its feathers around while all running around behind it. It's pretty cute. I would recommend looking that up.
It's a well mannered peacock. I don't met a peacock that would be that well mannered.
It blows my mind. They are like native and wild in Arkansas.
They're not even wild here, my man. Oklahoma.
Wow, I didn't know that either.
It's blowing your mind all over the place.
I'm like, they're so elegant.
Horrible dinosaur monsters.
Yeah, they really are awful,
are
awful
nasty
birds.
Creatures.
They are mean.
Will you just shake the mouse behind you, Jeff? Or Trevor? Just to get the... Yeah.
It was almost,
how violent
it was
of a shake
almost friends clapping.
Anyway, that's enough peacock talk for this week. We'll get some more next time. Laura asks, I apologize, there were more questions I had forgotten. Eris takes the time to maintain the blue in her hair, but doesn't brush it on a regular basis. Does she at least have a proper wash routine? How often does she re-dye it?
I think I have established that Eris does not re-dye her hair, that Eris has alchemically permanently altered the color of her hair follicles. I believe Laura that I said she never brushes her hair or maybe doesn't often brush her hair. Her hair is often messy, but I didn't intend to imply that Eris never brushes her hair. If I did, I apologize. She certainly washes. I mean, sometimes she may wash by means of prestidigitation, which just auto cleans stuff, but she is hygienic.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, Eris takes care of herself. Yeah, I love this idea of people asking Philip, who I've known for 20 years and has had one hairstyle, the intricacies of keeping up with women's hairstyles. Or at least has stayed in one family of hairstyles
in
20 years.
It's longer now, but it's still the same basic thing.
Yeah. I mean... So have I, most of us. Eric's the only one making real hair moves around here. Because he's the only one that still has a little bit of his hair.
I don't know. Trevor used to have hair, and now it's real small. Real
short. Oh, wow.
I did it myself, too.
Yeah?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's impressive. I'm
if you look too close, you can tell.
I'm impressed at how even it is.
I'm just going to make up
this
what it looks
super
like for the
good,
now.
This is super good non-visual.
Yeah. Carving a burger into the back was an interesting choice, but you did it yourself, and that's impressive.
I had the time.
Yeah. Okay. Dumb people making a dumb show.
Started to appear dumb.
I'm unfamiliar. Irene would like to know how
the movie called Lord of the Rings that
I've read the novelization of the movie.
Okay. Yeah. Not nearly as good. They added way too much. It's just bloated.
Philip died 6 times in the last 45 seconds. The question is, from Irene, how are Ulfin's improvements on the four sails going?
Jeff looked me square in the eye as if I got to answer that question.
No, sorry. I
didn't. Well, highly successfully.
Yeah. You did mention, didn't you, that Ulfin's is doing better?
Yeah, there's some more traffic coming in, and I mean, it's the doors are still open. So
depending on Milo's opinion of Eris's suggestion, he may get some new investors.
Oh, yeah. I will say, Ulfin's improvements are probably doing a lot better than any of the improvements any of us tried to help. Because yeah. Ulfin's were like, you know, with the food and the advertisements, and ours were like, I don't know, put a net up.
That fish is real stinky just hanging on the wall that Hob threw up there. So
it helped that he started doing poke.
Yeah, that is true. He's very, very trendy now. Well, seafood has become trendy, so, you know, he's just right place, right time kind of guy.
Then there's always some dork who's like, oh, Mercury. And like, man, shut up.
So.
All right.
Yep.
Well, we're out of questions, and as it's weird, like, that arc was consequential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And meaty. But not particularly nuanced, and any of the nuance we really cleared up in the downtime episode with just that was. Have we ever had? I know we haven't had a downtime episode this campaign, but I don't think we've ever had just like a reconcile for an hour kind of thing we've done. You know,
It was a peer mediation. Really,
we've had arguments that have gone on sometime. There was the whole thing with Gerald in the first campaign, but that was like a 10-minute tag at the end of an episode.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this was just Eric listening.
Which we never resolved.
Like, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Eric just straight up walked out of that conversation.
I don't know that it was resolved, but I feel like Dex said what he needed to say. Yeah, so the downtime episode was basically DM-less.
Yeah.
It was basically just play make-believe for an hour. Mm-hmm. How bored were you, Eric?
I enjoyed it. As Philip can attest with the multitudes of times that's already happened on Kyber Shards. Like, it's good to, you know, just be able to watch you all be in your characters and have those conversations and reconcile things and talk about moving forward. And no, I mean, I thoroughly enjoy that because I kind of consider my job as a GM to be facilitating opportunities for you all to have character growth and have your characters move forward and perform actions that I don't know. And so seeing you all do that without any need for me to facilitate that is good. And I like it. So
I have a question for Jeff.
No,
I noticed when we were doing that when Milo went off, you know, he just started when he was complaining about his magic, learning his magic. You got like the hugest grin on your face, like you were almost about to start cracking up. I'm curious. Why?
What was so funny, Jeff?
What was so funny? I was just like,
that
what?
Was not humor. That was joy. I like seeing Milo get a little bit of fire in his belly.
Mm-hmm.
Like genuinely. The same way that I was muted, I was screaming laughing. And like, I know that I clapped because it made Trevor laugh at one point. When Trevor was like, well, I like to think I'm not that person anymore, so that's why I never brought it up. Like, that was such a good Reynard answer, solely designed to upset all of us. I was cackling. And it was the same thing. I was like, okay, yes. I really enjoy watching you guys play. And I feel like sometimes the big Milo set pieces and the big Reynard set pieces are fewer and farther between than Philip and I just jabbering. So, no, okay, me jabbering and Philip doing consequential things with words.
Right.
That it makes me really, really happy. It was the same way with Booyah in the Booyah days. Like, when you decided you were going to have a Booyah moment, every single one was gold. And so I was smiling because I was really enjoying myself. Cut that. Eric, I don't want to hear any of that.
No, that's a good answer. I like that answer.
The people don't need to know I have feelings. Okay. I think that's it. Yeah. Right?
Let's do it.
Like, let's
go play some. Let's exactly. Go play.
Let's go play. Well, let's go. Let's leave and come right back to these Beggar Bones. That's
right. Let's stay here and play.
This has been Eberron Reviewed.
Woo.
We can be found all over the internet, specifically these spots. Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok at the Geek Pantheon. Eric can be seen streaming on Twitch at the Geek Pantheon. We have a YouTube at the Geek Pantheon. On that is Eric's kind of DM toolkit stuff.
Yep.
And also our other series, the YouTube series, Kyber Shards, on which Eric is a player, and Philip is the Dungeon Master.
Hello.
It's true.
If you would like to get in contact with us or join the conversation on any of these things, we have a Discord. You can find the link at the top of the geekpantheon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to figure something out after the thing I had to do this week. Not had to, but just sending out a link via DM. I'm going to figure out a way that we can have permissions changed on that.
Yeah.
So that will be more accessible to people. And as always, you can ask questions for these Eberron Reviews on that Discord. That's all I've got. Let's play Genesis. Woo! I've been Jeff.
I'm Philip.
I'm Trevor.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Eric.
Bye.
What is up, everybody? It is Eric here. Just a quick disclaimer. We had a really funny blooper for this Reviewed, but it is a huge spoiler for campaign one. So if you've not finished campaign one, stop listening right now. Do not go any further. But if you finished it, enjoy the clip.
We've had arguments that have gone on some time. There was the whole thing with Gerald in the first campaign, but that was like a 10-minute tag at the end of an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was just Eric listening.
Which we never resolved.
Like, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Eric just straight up walked out of that conversation.
I don't know that it was resolved, but I feel like Dex said what he needed to say.
I mean, Gerald got the last laugh. Yeah. So, you know.
Wow. Okay, we got to shut. No, we got to stop.
Hey, Phillip's walking away.
Hey, you got it. You've got to put it.